Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Rancher Government Solutions.
My guest today is retired Air Force Brigadier General Greg Tuhill, who's now the director of the Carnegie Mellon University's Software Engineering Institute's CERT Division, and the former Federal Chief Information Security Officer. Greg, always a pleasure to catch up. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Jason. Great to hear from you.
We are talking about software security. We're talking about DevSecOps, but mostly we're talking also about containerization. So we broad areas to hit upon in our conversation today. Let me start with that initial question. Software development has really taken on a new life over the last, I would say, 3-5 years around DevSecOps. What are some of those ways that you're seeing some of those best practices that are emerging around how agencies can really secure their software development?
Well, thanks for the question. You know, as we take a look at DevSecOps, DevSecOps was created here at the Software Engineering Institute as a model for integrating software development and the operational processes along with security in mind. Because all too often we were seeing a lot of products coming out that weren't necessarily secure by design. And when it comes to software, you really do have to engineer the product to meet your mission and operational needs. So DevSecOps is that model that incorporates security in all of the 7 stages of software development. From the imagination of a feature, you know, I want to request a feature, then it goes and gets articulated into requirements and architecture, design, development, testing, and delivery. At each phase in that software development process, you're incorporating security by design and making sure that you are producing a better product that requires less patching because it is, in fact, tested for security every step along the way. And, you know, a lot of folks talk about DevOps, and that's a set of principles and practices that emphasizes collaboration and communication between the software development teams and the operations team, the acquirers, the suppliers, and other stakeholders. But as we take a look at it, DevSecOps is DevOps done right, including security along the way. And it's something that, you know, government organizations, you know, my time in the military at DHS and later at the executive office, you know, government organizations are starting to really embrace DevSecOps as that model for integrating software development and operational processes with security. And they're putting it into their requirements, which is something that I think is late to need, but very welcome.
Greg, you bring up some interesting points I just want to go back to. The secure by design piece is something we've been talking about, I think, in the federal community for the feels like the better part of 15 or 20 years. Do you think it's just a matter of the technology has caught up, or is it the processes have caught up, or what has changed that why we now think about secure by design in a much different way than ever before?
Well, there's a lot of factors that go into it. First of all, in the past, we've seen security relegated as a add-on by the requirements team and the folks who are doing acquisition. Security was never articulated up front as a requirement in most government organizations. Ever since, we've seen some very active activities involving nation-state actors as well as organized criminal groups targeting government systems in particular. We're seeing folks saying, hey, we need to be incorporating security in our software acquisition as well as development. So there's a great deal of emphasis now on including security upfront as a requirement. And as a result, I think that folks who are incorporating DevSecOps as part of their software development process are discovering that independent of the platforms that are out there, you're getting a better product that's going to require less maintenance because it, in fact, has a disciplined engineering process behind the development of the code. It's less art than science. And in the past, we would just basically have folks do a lot of artistic work in software, but without the engineering rigor. Now we've got the engineering in place with DevSecOps.
I think your point is really well, because it's that understanding of why security is important and how to ensure that it's not just important at the end or the beginning, but throughout the entire process. And that's one of the things that I think has changed over the course of the last, again, 5-7 years, is ensuring throughout that life cycle. And one of the things we've seen emerge over the last, again, few years is this idea of containerization, this idea of whether it's Kubernetes or another approach. How does containerization start to impact that security piece? How does it ensure that it's, again, secure by design?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, but let me say, first of all, I think containerization is great. And Kubernetes, Docker, there's lots of different capabilities out there for containerization. But as you take a look at the abstraction of where your code is being run on a specific box or boxes in the cloud, ultimately, having a container is a kind of like a virtual machine inside a virtual machine inside an actual big hardware machine, is more effective, efficient, and if you do it right, it can be even more mature and more secure along the way. Containers are a software-enabled capability to use the actual computer hardware in a very effective and efficient manner. And it can also lower your cost and accelerate your operational capabilities by spinning up a virtual machine and then setting up some containers within that machine to run certain processes, procedures, codes, applications. And then when you no longer need them, you just take it all apart electronically. So it's not like you have to go out and buy a whole new big computer to run some sort of capability, where now you can just spin up a virtual machine, spin up a container within it, and run your code, get your result, and move on. It's a next step in technology. It's very exciting. And the fact of the matter is we see more and more folks investing in the security of containerization and the applications that are running within them.
I was actually going to ask that follow-up, because how often is this being used when you talk to your partners in the federal government and in industry? I know industry is very excited about it, but you get that same sense of excitement from your federal partners when you talk to them?
It's a mixed bag. You know, some folks who actually understand the technology and, you know, how it works, they marvel like we do here at the Software Engineering Institute as to the great capabilities that are available. But, you know, what we find is a lot of folks in the federal government, they're there to serve the American people and not necessarily to be the really detailed oriented technologists like my team and I are. But what we've seen, though, is a really good appreciation as to the need to leverage this technology in ways that positively affect the service to the American people. And then further, we're seeing and working with a lot of our partners in federal government to identify some of the best practices for them to use in containerization, as well as making sure that the people's information is secure and the designs and the architectures are secure by design. And I'm really encouraged by what I saw come out of GSA and FedRAMP with the FedRAMP vulnerability scanning requirements for containers, where the folks out there in the FedRAMP shop went out and worked with the cloud service providers, folks like my organization and others in the technology community, to identify some of the best practices for how to secure containers. And as part of the FedRAMP process, do vulnerability scanning too, to make sure that they're continually scanning on a regular basis to make sure that the integrity of the security of those containers is kept intact.
I appreciate you bringing up the FedRAMP and the vulnerability scanning. I know it's also something that your former organization, Homeland Security Department and CISA, is also pushing, you know, vulnerability disclosure programs and vulnerability scanning. They're talking a lot about red teaming and blue teaming and really trying to turn that up. Does having containers make that approach easier, harder? Does it reduce some of the complexity? Because you're just, for instance, scanning a single kind of box, a container, for lack of a better word.
Well, you know, one thing I've always said, Jason, is complexity is the bane of security. And, you know, if you're taking a look at the 20,000 foot level view, it's going to be different than the 10,000 foot level view. When it comes to implementing these technologies, we want the complexity to be put on the back of the folks who are trying to attack us, not on the folks that are trying to leverage the technologies. And we're seeing the containerization technologies improving in user interface as well as user experience as the technology matures and different commercial offerings continue to mature. And then further, we've seen, and my researchers here have been doing a lot of work on this and have posted a lot of their findings online through sei.cmu.edu, as well as in GitHub, which has really turned into a great community for sharing some of the best practices in this. But, you know, as you take a look at the complexity and the impacts of complexity, I think we still have ways to go, because there is a measure of complexity, particularly with trying to interface and bind together all the different type of technologies and different products. You almost get, if you were going to pick a container, you only can pick one without having some unique interface issues if you were using multiple containers simultaneously. And that you still can use multiple types of container technologies. It just increases the degree of difficulty for the operators that are trying to get things done.
We have to take a break.
My guest today is retired Air Force Brigadier General Greg Tuhill, who's now the director of the Carnegie Mellon University's Software Engineering Institute's CERT division.
I'm Jason Miller.
When security, speed, and scale are essential to your mission success, you need a partner who can deliver open source and cloud native software solutions designed to address the unique security and operational needs of the U.S. government and military. Whether it's in the cloud, on-prem, or at the edge, Rancher Government Solutions offers the leading software stack for teams adopting containers, addressing the challenges of managing multiple Kubernetes clusters at scale while providing DevOps teams with integrated tools for running containerized workloads. Learn more at ranchergovernment.com.
Welcome back.
My guest today is retired Air Force Brigadier General Greg Tuhill, who's now the director of the Carnegie Mellon University's Software Engineering Institute's CERT division and the former Federal Chief Information Security Officer. Greg, let me broaden out this conversation a little bit beyond just containerization, but really there's a big process to really understand what the software is, how it works, and it goes through a continuous idea of scanning, right? It's not just scanning once, but a continuous scanning. That's really the key to a lot of this software development change, where you used to develop something, throw it over the fence, and then it may get scanned every time it needs an ATO every 3 years. Now it's the continuous integration and continuous development that really is the difference to really improve the security of the software. What are you seeing from federal executives? What are you seeing across the government about the way they're kind of implementing that CI/CD pipeline?
Well, you know, there's some folks who have really done some pioneering work within the federal government. And, you know, during my time at DHS and the precursor organization to CISA, you know, we had Mark Nightinger, for example, who was one of our senior executives working with me. And Mark was really a kind of a pioneer in that continuous ATO or approval to operate process. And we actually, DHS, we reached out to Carnegie Mellon and the Software Engineering Institute to help out with a lot of that. And as we've seen the market move, a lot of it has been in response to some of the research that government has funded and some of the, you know, the open research that has been posted. And one of the things that I think is really encouraging is there's been a recent release of the DevSecOps platform independent model, which helps software developers, regardless of what type of operating system or platform they're developing, can incorporate DevSecOps. And that goes from the big iron, bare metal type of programming all the way down into the containers. So my colleagues have put together the DevSecOps, we call it the PIM, or the platform independent model. And it really is helping a lot of folks figure out how to integrate it well, you know, the security into the coding, but also set the stage so that you can continuously monitor how well your code is doing, how secure your data is as it's being processed. And as you take a look at how you scan, you know, from a vulnerability scanning process, the process remains pretty static in, you know, in the theory, you know, where you're going to identify your scanning environment and what's in there. You're going to evaluate any threats through scoring and prioritization. You remediate or treat your vulnerabilities, and then you have to report risk. All that stays pretty much the same, the construct or framework for scanning, but how you do it within the different layers, your environment, it becomes part of that importance of having a platform independent model.
Maybe dig a little deeper into the PIM. The reason why it's platform independent is because DevSecOps can cross Cloud One or Cloud Two or this type of software or this type, whether I'm using Java or C++ or whatever it is. Is that kind of the point here?
Absolutely. And, you know, we've seen, you know, through the work that we've been doing here with the Department of Defense, as well as the federal civilian executive branch departments and agencies, you know, we've seen the fact that, you know, the federal government generally buys about every product there is out there and then have to figure out how to lash it all together. And the commercial sectors, you know, the large companies in the commercial sector are the same way. And having had acquisition officials working with me throughout my career, they're looking for the best value for, you know, the mission of the organization. So often they'll go out and pick the best tool or the best piece of code or coding language to meet their operational need. But ultimately, you got to bind it all together into a seamless working model that meets the organizational mission. And because of that, when it comes to implementation of DevSecOps as a model for making sure that the software, the operational processes and security all are baked in from the beginning, you got to be able to factor in that it doesn't matter if it's a IBM or a Dell or, you know, Microsoft or, you know, pick your manufacturer or provider. You got to make it all work. And that's really one of the best values of the PIM is completely independent of the platform, but it shows you how to bring it all together for operational effectiveness.
This discussion around operational effectiveness is really going back to the beginning of maybe what you said, where you started at, is really why we're talking about DevSecOps so much more. To deliver those services, to digitally transform, to do it in a secure way, where are we going next with this concept? What are some of the research areas that Carnegie Mellon's looking at around software, secure software development that maybe you'd want to highlight?
Well, and there's several different things. We're looking at, we're taking it down below ring zero with one of our teams, taking a look at the firmware on the chip that's out there, you know, being able to detect, has that firmware on the chip been altered or, you know, has it been corrupted in the manufacturing process along the way, or maybe in the distribution process? So we're going below the ring zero and onto the chip level. We're also doing some really interesting research, taking a look at beyond just enterprise IT. As more and more connectivity occurs, enterprise IT is not the sole definition of your cyber ecosystem, because you've got industrial control systems, operational technology, Internet of Things, spectrum-enabled devices like your cell phones and mobile devices. And each one of those categories of devices often are coded with different types of software and different protocols, and being able to have a better understanding your entire cyber ecosystem through the software and the information that's available, the data through those different parts of your cyber ecosystem, is a pretty exciting new line of research that we're doing. And then last year, we provided through the Software Engineering Institute a national agenda for software engineering. So providing a new framework or model for how to look at software engineering that affects not only the folks who are doing the coding, but the folks who are establishing requirements. And it's really kind of exciting from the standpoint of a software engineering standpoint, having a whole public conversation and creating this national agenda for software engineering. It's online through us at sei.cmu.edu, and it was sponsored by the Department of Defense. So we've detailed out in that some additional new areas in addition to the two that I highlighted.
Greg, I very much enjoyed our conversation, so let me thank my guest. Retired Air Force Brigadier General Greg Tuhill is the director of the Carnegie Mellon University's Software Engineering Institute's CERT Division and the former Federal Chief Information Security Officer.
I'm Jason Miller.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Rancher Government Solutions on Federal News Network.
When security, speed, and scale are essential to your mission success, you need a partner who can deliver open source and cloud-native software solutions designed to address the unique security and operational needs of the U.S. government and military. Whether it's in the cloud, on-prem, or at the edge, Rancher Government Solutions offers the leading software stack for teams adopting containers, addressing the challenges of managing multiple Kubernetes clusters at scale while providing DevOps teams with integrated tools for running containerized workloads. Learn more at ranchergovernment.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Richmond of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs with this message for veterans. Did you serve in the military? Veterans should take note of a new life insurance program called VA Life. The program provides guaranteed acceptance of whole life insurance coverage to veterans 80 and under, with any level of service-connected disability. Some veterans 81 and older may also be eligible. Guaranteed acceptance is a whole life policy that doesn't require a medical exam or ask health questions. It also doesn't have a limited 2-year window to sign up. Whole life insurance provides coverage for the life of the policyholder, provided that premiums are always paid. Premium rates are locked in for the life of the policy. For more information, go to benefits.va.gov/insurance. I'm Mike Richmond.
I'm John O'Hurley, and I support Paralyzed Veterans of America because our heroes have sacrificed so much for our independence.
I had just come home. I had noticed my legs were swelling. Next thing I know, it was 3 weeks later. I was paralyzed. PVA has brought me back to life.
While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. It left me paralyzed. I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
For more than 75 years, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to never leave a fallen hero behind. That's why Paralyzed Veterans of America is providing specialized medical care, life-changing treatments, benefits our heroes earn, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need. Our paralyzed veterans have helped us live the lives we enjoy today. It's our turn to give them the best lives possible. To learn more, go to pva.org today.